Welcome to episode 77 of the Mountainland Running Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Heiderscheidt from the University of Wisconsin Sports Medicine, but sans co-host, Jeremy Stoker. He is seeing patients. Somebody's got to help the people that are out there. So we appreciate Jeremy being in the clinic today. As always, send questions and feedback to podcast@mlpt.com. Always appreciate hearing from you, as well as suggestions for future guests. Today, we are joined by Celeste Goodson and Aubrey McLeod of ReCore Fitness in Franklin, Tennessee, to discuss common training drills for return to running programs. Celeste Goodson founded ReCore Fitness in 2010, helping women regain core, pelvic floor strength, stability, and function, and return to running in high-impact sports. Celeste is a certified medical exercise specialist and USA Track and Field Level 1 track coach. She trains recreational to Olympic athletes postpartum and also patented the maternity postnatal fit splint belly support sold worldwide. Aubrey McLeod is an exercise physiologist at ReCore Fitness. She completed her master's in exercise science from BYU and has a clinical focus on pregnancy and postpartum training, working with athletes to strengthen and coordinate the core pelvic floor post-birth. Welcome, Celeste and Aubrey, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, looking forward to this conversation. As we mentioned earlier, anything related to return to running and being able to provide guidance for individuals who are returning to running is a hot area, mainly because there's just such a gap in our knowledge and understanding in that space.
Yeah, I was excited to have you bring us on. And I know Aubrey and I both, we cite your research as well. So it's exciting to talk with people that are in the same space.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. You're probably the two readers who've read our papers over the years. So I appreciate you. So, you know, the idea of training drills is interesting. Usually when we think of return to running, we think a lot about, you know, how do you progress mileage, right? You know, walk, run transition. What's that 10% per increase per week? You know, those sorts of rules of thumb. And we lose sight many times about drills that might be part of it. You know, what movement patterns, what initial pieces might you incorporate in to enable people to start reconditioning for some of those running related loads. So I was really keen on your paper that was recently published, which we'll get into in a little bit, and certainly wanted to have you on as guest. But maybe for our listeners, a little bit of background on each of you would be great. I know based on your work at ReCore Fitness, a lot of your focus area seems to be on women during and post-pregnancy. But obviously this work, your work that we're going to talk about today, but extends beyond just that population.
Yeah, that's correct. We took a wide approach with the study. For myself, I found myself working more with elite athletes past 7 to 8 years, and found the ones returning to high level sprinting or high impact sports. You know, it can be a little trickier for those postpartum athletes to have leaking issues, and they maybe need a little slower gradual return to run than a typical recreational athlete or someone who is dealing with prolapse or incontinence. It's just a little harder getting back into that impact, right? So, you know, doing some return to run lower impact drills with them, I noticed that sometimes I would see, like even on social media, other physical therapists, you know, having them do high knees in order to return to run, or just high impact drills. But in my mind, I just was like, well, we don't really know how, we really never quantified these drills. And so it would be really interesting to look at that. So that's how the study came about. I reached out to Mac, which he's amazing. You know, I think it was actually Twitter that brought this about, but you know, I was looking for the data. Like, do we know about agility drills? Do we know the ground reaction force of stair runs, hill runs compared to easy running compared to running drills? And people were like, well, it really hasn't been quantified. So that's how this all came about. And Max was super awesome to, you know, have his university do this study. And yeah, that's how we pulled it together.
So who's this mysterious Max you keep talking about?
Yeah, Max Paquette from the University of Memphis, and I know you know him.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm in Nashville, he's in Memphis. And so this was during COVID. We got the runners together, and he came to Nashville and did the studies in shoe vertical force.
That's great. I mean, that's the way so many great ideas come about, right? Is it's, you know, like you identify this gap in your clinic practice, and then you decide, I'm going to reach out and find out what we know about that area. But what's really unique is that you guys decided to, hey, I'm gonna do this then. If it doesn't exist, I want to answer this question, because not only will it help my patients and my practice, but it's going to help the general field as well. So kudos to you guys for that.
Thanks. Yeah. And that's when Aubrey joined recently, right after that. So we weren't working together at the time, but right after that, she joined. And she's incredibly knowledgeable with her past experience with research and just helped with this project, writing it as well.
All right, Aubrey, you're teed up now. What's your background? How do you fit in?
So my background is in biomechanics. I got a degree in exercise science and kind of focused more on mechanics and running shoes. And so after I had a baby, I came into being more interested in postpartum and pregnancy training. And that's when I started working with Celeste, which has been awesome. It's been super fun to apply my previous knowledge of mechanics and apply it to a population of women who really, I think, can benefit from it. So it's been fun to work on this project. Definitely.
Nice. So when we're thinking of external load, all right, because that's where you guys went at with the study, was if we're going to understand common training drills as it relates to return to running, we're going to try to define these external loads that are related to it. How did you decide to characterize load? Because load means so many different things to different people. How did you settle on the way that you did?
That's a good question, because vertical force is only like one small piece of a very, very large puzzle. And so we know that vertical force, you know, it does measure, like you said, that external loading, but it doesn't necessarily directly predict or address like the specific forces experienced, maybe like within joints and within tissues. But it can be very, very useful when we're looking at rehabilitation and wanting a way to quantify that slow like progression and a way to make it more methodical, I guess. And so we used it because it's a very easily measured factor. And in our study, we actually used, they were in sole wireless measures of force. So we were measuring the force between the foot and the sole of the shoe rather than mm-hmm. like our traditional force plate with mm-hmm. the measuring it between the foot and the ground. And so mm-hmm. That allowed us to take measurements outside of a lab, on a track, on concrete, on bleachers. And so it made it very applicable to how people would actually be doing these drills.
Nice. And so just for our listeners, reminder, the paper we're talking about today is called External Loading of Common Training Drills, Ranking Drills to Design Progressive Return to Run Programs. And this was published just recently in Physical Therapy in Sport. And we'll have the link to that on our download site with the podcast. So, and Celeste and Aubrey are the two initial authors or first authors on the paper. And they're joining us today to describe the work that they put together. Now, I was amazed at how many movements and running drills you guys did. I mean, normally you think about, oh, maybe there's 10, 12, 16, 46. You decided to do 40. I'm guessing you guys just couldn't make a decision as to which direction to go. So let's just do them all.
Yeah. Well, you know, another reason we did look at, you know, vertical force was because the pelvic floor, it has to, you know, the activity increases the pelvic floor with higher speed and impact. So that was another reason we chose to look at vertical force. But vertical force. We did choose a lot of exercises, and that I blame that on myself because I really wanted to know all of these.
Is that right?
Obviously.
So I was going to say, do you use all of these in practice?
I mean, just for, it depends on their sport,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah, this is definitely not a study where someone needs to go from 1 to 42 or 47, whatever it was. But just getting a good idea how they compared with each other, how they compared with easy running. And, you know, I had a few drills in mind that maybe I was curious about. I knew they weren't really low. I knew they weren't super high impact, but where did they fall compared to hill running and easy running, that kind mm-hmm. of thing.
So when we look at these measurements, so you had, let's talk through the study design a little bit. Like you mentioned, you brought, these are all runners that you studied, and yes. you had them wear these insoles, wireless insoles, while they performed all 46 of these movements in succession, I'm assuming, or were they randomized in the order that they did them?
Yeah, they were randomized in the order they did them based on areas in the track, you know, the stair area, the hill, the track itself.
Okay.
But yeah, they did get their breaks in between their drills.
Yeah, sure.
And they're all experienced with doing drills.
And how many people total did you end up studying?
We had 11. So 6 men, 5 women.
Okay. All right. Just out of curiosity, how long did it take to collect 46 drills on one person?
Well, the whole day. I mean, it was an afternoon.
You got everybody collected in one afternoon.
Yeah, we did. We had one afternoon between, I think it was like noon and 4:30. We were done with everyone.
You're moving. Nice work. That's very good. All right. So now that you've got these data sets, you got your individuals collected, all 46 conditions. Your goal then was to try to rank order. Is that right? You're like, which had the highest vertical loads and which had the lowest vertical loads? And then I noticed in your analysis, you also did it as a percent of fast running. Can you describe what that meant as a percent of fast running?
Yeah. So with that percentage, we were meaning to compare it to the forces experienced during fast running in order to kind of help maybe visualize it or think it through a little bit more. So drills that were maybe like 50% or 60% of the percent of fast running you could perform earlier on in your rehab progression. So just a way to kind of conceptualize it a little bit better.
Okay. And just for context, do you have a rough estimate as to what speed you thought of as fast running? Because, you know, that obviously a change is vertical force will change with running speed. And then one person's concept of fast is such quite a bit different than another person's.
Yes. That's a super good point. So we had the drills performed at easy and fast paces, and the easy pace was just like the typical easy run pace. And then the fast pace correlated to about a 5 kilometer race pace. And so, like you said, we had these 11 runners, and there was quite a bit of variability in, you know, their skill level, their speed level. But they were all very familiar with how those two paces would feel in training. And so we report, that's all reported in the study, the average easy pace, average fast pace. And it allowed us, it introduced, because there was differences in that speed, it introduced a little bit of variability in the specific numbers for vertical force, but it still allowed us to have a solid base work for ranking. So comparison of the drills.
Okay. And then you also put them into categories, like 4 different categories based on the drills. What were the 4 categories?
Yeah, that was Max's idea to put them in categories. So it'd be a little easier, you know, if a therapist or coach wanted to stay in category 1 for a little while, they'd have a little easier way to look at it. But it was, I think, anything less than 1.6 times your body weight, that was category 1.
Okay.
Category 2 was 1.6 to 1.9 times your body weight. Category 3, 2 to 2.4. And then category 4 was greater than 2.4.
Okay.
And as you know, we didn't go faster than that. Actually, I think it was 10K pace. We didn't go faster than that, because we were really just looking at the drills. But as you know, sprinting, running faster is going to be higher than that.
Yeah. So if we look at the drills, because our listeners are going to want to understand, all right, so what drills did you do and how do these fall out? And if we think of fast running, that was in category 4. So that was in the highest category. So however fast they ran, the vertical loads they experienced were in that category 4. But then, and there was only 5 movements or 5 drills that had loads greater than what the runners experienced in fast running. And these were fast butt kicks, fast high knees, bounding, soldier big, which I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of hard to describe some of these drills.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, an athlete, if they do the soldier or the straight leg bounding exercise, that, you know, 2 ways people
for sure
refer it to, you know, if they do that full speed, that was fast.
Yeah.
Or if they do it just easy, that was the other way we looked, just to see how different, how different it was.
But the advantage of having most of the other drills, or 40 some odd drills that had loads lower than what they experience in fast running, is great, right? Because that's what we're looking for, is we're looking for this variety to be able to progress before they get back into that level of load that they experienced with in this case, fast running. And even if you look at the loads that they experienced with easy run, gosh, you still have 34 drills that have lower loads, vertical loads, than what they experience with an easy run, which is great, right?
Right. Lots of choices and lots of tools in the toolbox, really, is a way to look at it. And for those listening, we do have a video of all these exercises. So I know the names can be a little confusing, but we have a video of all of them.
Where are the videos? Are they available online? Or?
Yeah, they can email us and we'll send it to them, or there is a link in the study as well.
Oh, there's a link in the study. Great. All right. Yep. All right. So out of these category one, which everybody kind of has their favorite drills or their go-tos yep. that they usually go to, you know, and then you might deviate from. I'm curious as to Aubrey and Celeste, what are your go-to extra drills for category one? Top yeah. two or three, maybe.
Well, it, like you said, working with a postpartum runner, I would pick ones like the agility line shuffle side to side or front to back. Mm-hmm. So there's line shuffle, the line lateral jumps. Even what's interesting is you'll notice the lowest was a squat jump, but it's a mini jump, like you're barely coming off the ground. And that mm-hmm. was, you know, the lowest impact drill we had. The thing that this study, which I don't know if we want to get into yet, but was knowing that when you're working with postpartum runners, we do also need to consider vertical oscillation. And that's something we haven't really talked a lot about, but it changes, you know, it increases intra-abdominal pressure. It's not something that's really been studied, but a squat mini jump, I might test it out with the postpartum runner. But if it's bringing on some symptoms or feels uncomfortable, I'm going to stick with the, like a line shuffle because of that.
Wait, sorry, when you say vertical oscillation, do you mean in terms of like their vertical displacement, how much they're moving their center of mass up and down?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Right. Aubrey, how about you? Do you have any other favorites that you like within category one?
Yeah, good question. I always appreciate the stair drills. And there's only one in category one, but there's quite a few as you move throughout the categories. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's a great option to make an aerobically challenging workout for athletes who, you know, want to be working and want to be getting their heart rate up without having such high vertical forces. And so within category one, we have the stair switch, which is where you're kind of going up and down one single stair with your feet. Mm-hmm. And it gives a place to start where you feel like you're getting a good workout in.
Nice. So when we think about, you know, your the title of your paper was thinking about how to progress to return to run. When you utilize these drills, how do you utilize these drills as part of your overall return to run philosophy or approach? Are these, do you go through a drill sequence where you go from category one to two to three to then to begin to run? Or are you starting to do some easy run, which in this case kind of falls into that category three at the same time as they're doing one in category one and two drills? What is your approach, I guess, to utilize this information to build a more general comprehensive return to run?
Yeah. If it's a non-complicated delivery and recovery, you know, if you're just doing a couple simple impact tests, you know, like jog in place, you know, jump on one foot, like how is that feeling for pelvic floor symptoms, then they may not need a lot of these drills. They may do some of these drills because they're a runner or because, you know, they are going to get up to sprinting. So, you know, they get up to their running, then you do some of the higher level running drills, help them prep for sprinting. Some may not need a lot of these. It's more the postpartum athletes that are dealing with stress incontinence, prolapse, that they may need to spend a couple weeks in category one, category two, you know, category one for a couple weeks, and then category two, hill running is also really, really good, getting them doing those types of activities for a few weeks to a month before maybe easy running feels good.
Nice. So when do you, I think I want to phrase this, but when you're adding the mileage component to it, do you use a particular mileage progression as part of the incorporation with the drills? Or for example, is it a combination of one walk, run back and forth based on minutes and then move all the way to all running? And then when you do, or what is your approach to mileage buildup?
Yeah, I do usually use a run walk. You know, after they do hill runs, they start doing run walking before they're just doing easy running. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, it's usually by minutes and shorter rest times in between. And then really don't get to mileage until, you know, they get past the run walking.
Is Aubrey similar approach as well, or any change in terms of what you might progress?
Yeah, very similar. I think Celeste hit on a good point that we're looking at the total load that the athlete is experiencing, and that's including drills, that's including running, that's including everything that they're doing. And so keeping all of those factors in line to progress that total load incrementally.
So when we think about your paper as in a whole and trying to, you know, we always want to pull out what's that key takeaway message, right? What is it that you want the listeners to really be able to take away from your work, which was just great. As I mentioned, it's, you know, to have to one, to be able to take it on when you don't work in a traditional academic environment is challenging for anybody to do. So kudos to you both for taking the initiative to do it. And then two, of course, the goal is to then share that with colleagues in a way that they can utilize it. So what's your pearl? What's your take home message for our listeners?
I think the biggest takeaway is what drills fall under, you know, lower than easy running, mm-hmm. But also paying attention. Because I looked at these drills with the study and realized, yeah, that may be a category one exercise, but it's a higher vertical oscillation exercise. And I probably actually wouldn't give my postpartum client that specific exercise early on. So it's more stuff to study, more things to look at. Like, this is really helpful as far as, you know, giving more tools in the toolbox and, you know, knowing what comes after easy running or if it's higher than easy running. But like I said, paying attention to vertical oscillation is something we really should look at further. And also something else not looked at the study is single versus double leg exercises. Sometimes that can feel different for postpartum women and just testing that out with them. And you might need to stick to single leg progression of increasing vertical forces for a little while before double, because I think, again, it affects the vertical oscillation.
So you mentioned, like, this is, you know, the kind of the initial piece and more work. It is, you have more questions. So I've got to ask, what's your next study? Now that you've got the taste of research, you're not going to let it go. I know you're hooked.
Yeah, I'm sure Aubrey has some ideas, things. You know, she's a little more in the research field than I was to start, but I do always feel like, you know, after you're working with these athletes for so long, you're like, hey, is someone going to look at this? And so I'm just all about looking, getting the researchers to do it. But yeah, be very interesting to look at.
We've also been looking at doing some more specific studies on looking at assessments. Mm-hmm. So because we work with like a postpartum population, looking at specific tests to use to test certain aspects of core strength and coordination, like a way to kind of quantify it and easily tell where they're at without using complex tools or measurements. So we'll probably be working on that as well.
Well, if you can crack that, count me in. I want to hear what you come up with on that. That's a big one. I'd love to see what you guys come up with. I have no doubt you'll do it.
Yeah. All right. The intra-abdominal pressure, which I know you've, you know, looked at that, knowing how that affects the pelvic floor, understanding how that changes through different types of core exercises, different types of, mm-hmm. you know, impact exercises. I think that's another fascinating area. And I think there's a couple other researchers I know, they're into the intra-abdominal pressure, but that's another one there's just a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of factors when you work with an athlete, you know, what injury do they have? What are they dealing with? What are their symptoms? That's going to determine what kind of exercise you choose for them.
Celeste, Aubrey, thank you both for joining us today and taking the time to share your work with us. And again, kudos for taking the initiative to carry it out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's podcast. On behalf of my absent co-host, Jeremy Stoker, I'd like to thank you for tuning in. And as a reminder, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Reminder to check also for updates on the 2023 Mountainland Running Summit, September 26th through the 28th at summit.mlpt.com. As always, you can find more information on all the running medicine resources offered by Mountainland Physical Therapy at mlpt.com/running. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Exercises that are safe and appropriate for some people may not be for you. No treatment program should be undertaken without first consulting your physical therapist or physician. The contents of this podcast is protected under United States copyright laws and may not be reproduced, redistributed, transmitted, displayed, published, or broadcast without prior written permission of Mountainland Physical Therapy.